Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
5 and 5. One is our text number. You heard Ray Ronan on the programme before because he contacted us before Christmas. He's written a book called Seconds to Disaster. He's an Airbus A320 captain. Ray, good afternoon again.
Hello, Joe. Good to talk to you again. How are you?
Like everyone, I presume you're mesmerised by what's happened to this Malaysian aircraft. And now in the last few minutes, the Malaysian government have said they can assume beyond doubt that the plane flew into the Indian Ocean and assume beyond doubt that there are no survivors.
Yeah, it's a very sad ending to that tragedy. There's an awful lot of speculation going on, and that will continue because although the flight, you know, flew for what, 6 or 7 hours after it made the turn, apparently some data shows that it descended to 12,000 feet and then climbed back up to altitude again, because to get that kind of range, the aircraft has to fly at a high altitude. So, you know, before any more speculation really, I suppose, confirms anything, they have to know if that 12,000 foot descent actually occurred. But if not, if the aircraft just turned and flew at altitude for the whole route until it ran out of fuel, you have to look at the question, were the crew incapacitated for some reason?
The airline are saying, assume beyond doubt no one survived. It ended up, they're adamant now, it did end up in the southern Indian Ocean.
Yeah, yeah. It's for sure it's out there. The UK Air Accident Investigation Board has analysed data alongside the Inmarsat satellite company. Mm-hmm. And they've looked at the angle of the radio transmissions that were made, the pinging that went on, and they've deduced that that's where it's happened. So what we know for sure, the route that the aircraft took, we know for sure that the debris nature, this orange piece of debris, which could be life jackets or it could be life rafts as well. So it's pretty certain that unfortunately all those lives were lost on flight 370.
And when you spoke to Ray about altitude, what is your frame?
On what may have happened, is it?
Yes.
Well, the first thing you do if there's an issue on the aircraft is you have to, we call it aviate, navigate, communicate. The first thing you do is aviate. So if you have a smoke problem or toxic fumes problem or a fire, the first thing you do is keep the aircraft under control.
Okay.
And then you navigate. So basically the guys might have said, well, we have to fly the aircraft. You have control, I have control. They'll turn the aircraft possibly towards the nearest airport, which is what occurred. And then they'll talk to air traffic control and say, look, we have a problem. But that third thing, aviation, navigate, communicate, the third thing may not have happened if the crew had become incapacitated for some reason. And that is a likely scenario. If the aircraft didn't descend to 12,000 feet, as is indicated, if that has happened, then there is a possibility that something, untoward happened and there may have been a hijacking on the aircraft, you know.
And I know because you spoke about it when you talked about your book, a lot of your pals and the world you live in, and you wrote about this, and I know your book was self-published, you're enthusiastic about trying to get messages out and this on your, and you're very knowledgeable about previous crashes and examples. But are you saying, I detect today you were saying maybe there was a toxic fume that knocked everyone out and the plane just kept flying.
That's a possibility. Like I say, the first thing you'll do is turn the aircraft towards, off the airway and towards an airport that you could use for landing.
Okay.
So that could explain why the aircraft turned off the route. The second thing is they were busy flying the aircraft, and if toxic fumes or smoke or something like that kept them so busy that they had no time to communicate and possibly knocked out the passengers and crew, and then the aircraft would just keep flying. However, if the aircraft descended down to 12,000 feet, but then climbed back up to altitude again, then you have to question why. What was going on aboard the aircraft at the time? Were the pilots that were in charge of the aircraft really in charge of the aircraft at that stage? Was it somebody else? So still a lot of questions, unfortunately, to be answered. But, there's no reason why this aircraft should have gone missing for 17 days. The technology is there for basically aircraft position reporting to be mandatory especially for long haul aircraft. Mm-hmm. And it should be a system.
So why? So Ray, what's your theory there?
Well, is it costs? You know, when it, is it cost that the airlines don't do this, and some airlines do have it, and the aircraft is position reported constantly through ACAR systems, but it's only a 6 to 8 digit, well, 8 digits or 10 digits position reporting, a text message sent every 5 minutes to satellite systems around the world, so that no aircraft should ever go missing. That technology is there, and that should be mandatory. But what actually happened on this aircraft? Well, they may never find the black boxes. Well, the sea is like 2 to 4 miles deep in the Indian Ocean. I mean, it's going to be some job to find that. Yeah. And unless you find the cockpit voice recorders and the flight data recorders, then there may never be answers to this, you know?
And I know you mentioned to us the last time you were on the Air France crash off Brazil, 447, where three young Irish women were killed. Is this a similar, in terms of the way it's unfolding, in terms of the duration, the mystery, the inaccessibility of the location? Or do you think there are still critical differences?
I suppose the critical differences are that we didn't have any information at all from the in-flight ACAR system that should really send... it's an aircraft communications addressing system, and it sends automatic updates of how the aircraft is, the health of the aircraft and what's going on board. There was nothing at all. It was the complete lack of information, really, that really differentiates this, you know. And you're talking about a million square miles of ocean. They looked north, they looked south, they looked east, and they looked west. And that's the critical difference. We had an idea that something critical had happened on the Air France. But with this, we had no idea. Was it technical? Was it a hijacking? You know, was it a deliberate act on behalf of the pilots? Who knows? You know, that's the critical difference, is the lack of information with the Malaysian Airlines flights, you know.
And what effect does this have on pilots flying? They just get on with their job and make sure they do all the safety checks and the people around them are reliable and...
Yeah. I mean, look, it is still the safest form of travel.
Yeah, I know.
But the industry doesn't need this kind of mystery hanging over it. You know, yeah. Boeing will be concerned. Malaysian Airlines will be concerned that their pilots didn't, you know, mess up. Passengers will be concerned. Nobody needs this kind of mystery in the industry. And it's critical, really, we learn from these mistakes. And we need to find out what happened. We need to find the aircraft. We need to find the black boxes. And put an end to this kind of mystery. We don't need a Marie Celeste of the modern aviation era, you know.
And they are, I see China and indeed the airline are offering to fly relatives out to Australia, but we cannot even begin to imagine what those relatives are going through, realizing, one, the not knowing, and two, the powerlessness.
Yeah. I think for victims' families, we, you know, our book was bought and published. So we had a book launch in Madrid, and it's published in New York by a publisher there. But I met some of the victims' families of a Spanish air crash when we had the book launch in Madrid. And that's pretty tough, you know, when you meet people that you've written about their families and the cause of the accident and why it shouldn't have happened. And it's only the reality of meeting people who've lost relatives in air crashes that hits you that this is real. You know, it's not a movie. It's not a fictional piece of work. This happened to these people, and they have to live with it every day. And really, as an industry, you know, we have to do our very best to solve these mysteries and to make sure it doesn't happen again. And that's what aviation is, an industry leader in that field, you know.
But I know you made a point. Okay, aviate, navigate, communicate, and they navigated initially. The data would indicate towards a landing spot, but it ended up nowhere near any landing site.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you talk about communicate. There's enough automated systems now and satellites these days to really remove the need to communicate from the pilots in some sense that there's an emergency. Again, you know, position reporting should have been made. If it was a smoke problem or toxic fumes problem, this may not have come up on the automated systems on board the aircraft. The pilots can see the smoke, the cabin crew possibly, and the passengers, but this won't come up as an indication on the aircraft systems. So this would not have been reported back via an ACAR system, even if that was working, you know. It's going to be this could take years to solve. It took 2 years to find the black bottle, to recover the data from the Air France, yeah. And this can be very similar, you know.
Okay, Ray Rowan, and he wrote the book with Glenn Mead, who's another fine writer, but also is an aviator. He runs the simulator. That's the last time I met. He runs the simulator in Dublin Airport. Ray Rowan, thanks indeed. The book is called Seconds to Disaster, and as we say in the last the press conference in the last few minutes. The Malaysian government is saying beyond doubt the plane is lost, beyond doubt it has gone into the sea, and it went into the sea in the southern Indian Ocean, far from any landing site. Thanks indeed, Ray. 51551.